Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. In his 8 years as senator representing the Kenai Peninsula, Senator Peter Michicki has served as chairman of numerous committees and feels as if all of his experience has led to this moment. And it isn't an easy moment in the state's history as he takes the helm of becoming Senate president. I talked with Senator Michicki about his new role leading the Republican majority. He says to do that job well, he will have to work with several factions within the legislature.
If you notice the tagline of our caucus, it's a caucus of equals. We're not going to marginalize a side because they don't happen to agree with part of leadership. We're going to work together. What's really strong about our caucus is we have representatives that believed in a full dividend. We have representatives, senators in this case, that believed in a very low dividend, and we have everything in between. So we have that same collection. People are going to move around on different little factions depending on the issue because our districts are so diverse. So we have very moderate districts in Southeast that are represented and Kodiak that are represented by moderates because that's the politics of those districts. And we have folks from the Kenai Peninsula and the Valley that are very conservative because of the politics in those districts. And we're going to make it work. I think Alaskans, no matter where they are, demographically, politically, will hear opinions very similar to theirs as we talk to these issues and look for solutions.
Well, the permanent fund is still going to be a difficult one. Now, you've begun hearings this week on budget matters, reports on oil revenue. What are you hearing? Does it sound a little better? Does it sound a little worse?
Well, it's interesting because I think, obviously, if you look at the percentage of Alaskans that supported Trump, I think a lot of them were focused on the natural resource development issues. Some may have supported him politically for other reasons, but we knew that a Biden administration was going to be rough on the things that we do for a living. And it's not only oil and gas, it's mining and fishing, and it's going to be very difficult. So the price is improving. Production has remained very stable with a 1% decline over the last several years, I think since 2016. That's very positive, and we think we have developments that are going to increase that level of production. At the same time, we have depressed prices because of COVID with a lack of demand. And we have an administration now that sent between 400 and 600 highly compensated Alaskans home to be laid off once the permitting and forward progress on some of those projects evaporated with one signature the other day. So it's a mixed bag. I'm hoping that the Biden administration recognizes that if you're concerned about carbon production and climate change, I would rather have the production in one of the most, if not the most, regulated oil and gas production regimes on the planet. Or if you want to shift that production back to the third world where they're desperate for economic activity and have no controls whatsoever.
Our gas development has been on the back burner. Might that be something that the Biden administration would be willing to look at because people are wanting electric cars and electric cars need fuel to run the batteries?
If you look at the executive order, it's obvious that the goal is to move into carbon neutral on a very aggressive schedule. And they talk about things like the social cost. What they don't seem to be considering is the social cost of freezing in the dark during the transition or the thousands of jobs lost today and the tens of thousands lost tomorrow by losing domestic oil and gas production. So the lower 48 is awash in gas. They have no need for Alaska natural gas production. If Alaska natural gas was going to go online, it would be distributed internationally. And most environmental, particularly extreme environmental NGOs, do not see the bridge fuel of natural gas as a better choice. They want to move right beyond that to alternative energy sources, which kind of leaves us in the dark. If the Biden administration is not accepting that as a better option environmentally, then I think we're really going to struggle. I'm hoping the moratorium will allow them to go back and consider things that are in the NEPA process, National Environmental Protection Act. When we have an established process, there's a reason why many of the energy projects have already been through what we have on the books right now for following federal law. So if they're going to rewrite the rules through executive order without due process, that's scary. That's going to result in more issues like you saw with the Anwar bids, where we didn't really receive any. The state simply bid on them to tie them up because energy companies are really worried that they may begin investment and just be shut down and left holding the bag. So I hope there's a better process moving forward from the administration.
Well, one of the things that is concerning is that the banks, a number of the major banks, are saying they're not going to loan money to the oil industry. That doesn't look good either.
Right. So when you're a board member of a major bank and you have physical threats against you and your family if you support certain projects, it's just a matter of time before that type of veiled terrorism, if you will, takes effect. They have other places to lend. Most of the banks, and now it's spread to the board members of the energy companies that are looking at Alaska. You know that Anwar has been a battleground for 40 years. Many of them are intimidated out of moving forward on projects like that. If you couple that with the promise of the geology and NPRA as we move north and west, that has been an excellent prospect with find after find after find. But again, you're going to run into the same issues. They'll shift their, if they can shut down Anwar again, they're going to shift their focus to all production on federal land. And that will complicate the economics of even production on state land in Alaska if you don't have the volume that we were hoping for out of NPRA and other areas.
So if this were a slot machine, it looks like things are coming up lemons for Alaska's economy, for the state budget. So how do you go forward?
We have an incredible asset in a $70 billion permanent fund. We're very blessed that our forefathers thought about the fact that yesterday's production would someday be tomorrow's services, as well as for paying a permanent fund dividend. But we are going to have to go to battle, hopefully respectfully, with this administration. Hopefully we can have some conversations so that they understand that this disproportionately affects Alaska more than any other state. It's what we do. Hopefully they can appreciate the fact that domestic production is more environmentally responsible and much more heavily regulated than in other places. And maybe we can find some middle ground that'll give some of the future prospects. I mean, we're getting close to a final investment decision on Willow. I mean, Willow could be 100,000 barrels a day. I mean, that would be a huge boost to the revenue on production taxes and royalties for the state of Alaska. And then when you look at the impact on areas on the North Slope, the communities that also make their living from part of the share of those production locations, I mean, it will dramatically negatively impact them as well. So I think as they kind of start building this puzzle of what the Biden administration looks like, hopefully the moratorium is just that. It's just giving them time to regroup and for them to think at some point that it's not black and white. Some areas of production could be very beneficial for not only the people in the state, but for strengthening America's energy position with a lot lower impact to the environment than we see from third world production.
Do you think, given all the cards that are laid out before us, that Alaska can afford a mega dividend?
So I do believe in a stimulus dividend. We the Senate actually passed a $2,000 dividend last year and only paid out, after negotiating with the House, we were only able to deliver a $1,000 dividend, and that's fine, $916. I do think Alaskans are suffering right now. I don't mind a stimulus dividend that would be included with a 21 payout. That's a conversation that has to occur about the permanent fund dividend. There's no question about it. We all love our dividends. It's a part of our cultural, social fabric in the state of Alaska. But we have to talk about real math, and we have to balance that with the other services that Alaskans are either guaranteed through the Constitution or that have been added to the portfolio through the years. So we're going to openly have those discussions. You're going to hear sort of senators that feel every different way. And we're going to find a way to get to the finish line working with Alaskans on what a sustainable plan looks like going forward.
Do you think that this is a very unprecedented session in more ways than one, not just because of COVID, but because of the difficult circumstances before the state?
Yes, it is unprecedented, but it is related to COVID and the price of oil and the demand and the challenges in the energy industry, all of the things that Alaskans do for a living, fishing, tourism. I think the sort of 20-20 in the House is a problem. We had a difficult time organizing because of these issues. We were here on day one, ready to go to work. But I empathize with the House that is evenly split, and they're going to have to find a way forward. So I hope that things come together for them soon, our partners across the building to come to the table. And we have a lot of very serious issues to work on so that Alaska can continue to have a bright future. We've been, again, sort of stagnant for the last several years, and we're going to have to break that stagnation and perform as a legislature, or the state is in for dire straits in the very near future. So I'm very hopeful that we can take all of those problems, come to the table, agree to disagree where we can, but eventually compromise into some solutions that actually provide some forward motion for us.
So where are you looking for inspiration? Because this will take a lot of leadership on every lawmaker's part, but particularly the leadership.
Yeah, there's no question. We kind of have a 3-3 leadership team with moderates and conservatives. I don't look at the Senate as only a 14-member Senate. It's a 20-member Senate. We're going to have to come together with our minority, and whomever the minority is on the other side, they're going to have that same philosophy. Alaska's issues are not partisan issues. I mean, we can look at the social stuff, right? And we might be somewhat more partisan when we think about things like whether you're pro-life or pro-choice. And there's no reason that we shouldn't be working together and finding a way to get some solutions across the finish line without thinking about the letter someone that's next to someone's name, their gender, their race, where they're from in the state. We should be a big family and work together to finally make some forward motion.
One last question for you is, over the years, you always bring your family to Juneau, and it's been fun watching your daughters grow up. Did you bring them this time?
They are not here yet, because for the first year in a very long time, I was watching a movie with Lucy, and she said, "Daddy," and I said, "Yes," and she said, "I have not had my birthday with my friends at home since I was a baby." And I said, "Would you like to have your birthday at home?" And she said, "Yes." I said, "Done." So this Saturday is Lucy's birthday. Next week they will come up. So I'm going to go home and get the giant Labrador Retriever so my wife doesn't have to travel with him. And they'll be coming the middle of next week.
Well, it'll be good to see them arrive. It will kind of bring a sense of continuity. It's been fun to watch them grow up. How old is the oldest and how young is the youngest?
So when I started in the legislature, there were only three. And then we went on a little legislative trip, and a few weeks later realized that we were going to have a fourth. So Stella is 6, Lucy is 11, about to be 12, Sophie is 14, and Madeline is 25 now. So most folks that know us from this legislative family have watched a big change over the years, and I am so proud of my girls for being flexible and participating in what Daddy does for a living. They are my support system, and I can't imagine doing it without them. So I'm really grateful. My wife moves the family twice a year, and she always has a smile on her face. I'm a very lucky man.
A lucky man indeed. And that was Senator Peter Michicki talking to us as week 2 of the Alaska legislature comes to a close. The House remains unorganized.